This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
They crucified apple farmers. There won't be any family farms left within 5 to 10 years. All you're going to have is corporate farms. And if you think that consumers are paying a lot of money for the food now, you wait when we're gone.
So that's Guy Gator telling the Senate inquiry into supermarkets there won't be any family farms left within 5 to 10 years. They're all going to be corporate. So what happens if there's no family farms, either small or large scale? If generational farming is lost, how does that impact you and I, whether it be access to fresh food, to cost? Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning, Daniel Miles. Dan, what does it matter if family farming is lost within a decade?
Yeah, good morning, Rochelle. I was thinking about this on the way into the studio this morning, and I feel like one thing that really struck me was the idea of what farming means to Australians and what farming and generational farming particularly means to our sense of identity here in Australia. So much of who we are is what we've done with the land and how from this arid country, this barren, dry land, we've been able to feed a nation. And there's pride in the families that have done that. So what does that do to our idea of who we are as Australians if all of a sudden that's not a thing anymore? It's corporations that have taken over. And I guess the other element of this, as Guy Gator really touched on so well in that grab then, was we are living in a time that is so expensive. It is incredibly hard to get by for thousands and thousands of families. And fresh fruit, fresh vegetables is one of those things. So if we lose generational farming, if we lose these family-run farms, does all of a sudden that give a monopoly to corporations that put fresh apples out of reach, put fresh bananas, lettuce? Are we no longer going to be able to afford those things?
There's only a handful, right? So we talk about the duopoly, the supermarket duopoly. What if you start to see a duopoly within farming, for example? That might take some time. But then at the same time, I like the idea that you're talking about that image of a family farm. Now, family farms can be huge. You know, these aren't just these small, hokey little things. I mean, the whole image of even a farmer, I think, sometimes falls under a stereotype. So we have to look at, well, what is a family farm? How do we support a family farm? How big are they? But the concept of succession within farming at the moment, I wonder how many kids are thinking, do I want to be handed the family farm? We know there's issues with women, with daughters being handed the family farm, but would you want one? Like if your parents owned a farm right now and you were next in line, would you want to take over the family farm?
I think it's a harder choice to make now than it would have been generations earlier, because perhaps parents' generations and grandparents' generations before that, it was just what you did. You didn't have the plethora of choice that we have. Two generations ago, there weren't social media managers out there. There weren't influencers that actually had these opportunities for people to take creative outlet. Now, I don't know if it's something that I'd want to do, seeing the toil and the struggle, particularly, I mean, you think back to the dairy industry, the struggles that they've gone through dollar a litre milk and the toil and hard work. I don't know if I'd actually be putting my hands up for it. And I think that's probably a sentiment that's right across this next generation that's seen the struggles that their parents have gone through to feed a nation. Is that something that they want to take on board?
And when we look at the shift and the potential shift from family farms to corporate farms a little later in the program, we'll speak to a supply chain expert who spent a lot of time in the United States, who saw it happen there and has seen the repercussions. So are you a generational farmer? Does it matter if we see less and less family-run farms?
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
A lot of farmers have already left the sector, and more Australian farmers, particularly family farms, are considering giving it up and leaving farming. This is a critical food security issue
That's Green Senator Nick McKinn there. Rochelle Hunt and Daniel Miles with you. As we look at the future of family farms in Australia, many who are close to the industry, who are farmers, who are orchardists themselves, believe that there will be no family farms within 5 to 10 years. This text, Dan, it's interesting. It says, there's a second question that you have to ask. How will corporation farms treat the land? As commercial corporations, do they have a great track record of dealing with things like recyclables and waste? They focus on profit at the expense of everything else. Do we want corporate farms? We need to ban or boycott corporations. That's what we need to do. And so many farmers that you speak to will say that they feel like they are the ultimate climate activist without the land being in its purest form, without it being in the best shape it possibly can be, they have no business.
Yeah, and who better to look after the interests of the land than the family that has lived there for generations and generations and have seen them, you know, make something out of nothing. There's a certain level of love that comes with that, and I think that's a big part of generational farming as well, isn't it?
And that expectation, right, of love. I mean, that falls into so many industries, even like hospitality, which I know we're going to discuss later in the week, but people can't do it for love. Bill's in Wodonga. Morning, Bill.
Yeah, good morning, Rochelle. I've got an auntie, her side of the family have all got dairy farms down Camp down Colac way. And their kids in the past used to grow up loving the fact that they were going to be working on the farm. But now their next lot of generation is saying, well, they don't want it because it's too, the amount of paperwork and that goes through with it.
Oh, so it's the bureaucracy, not the actual physicality and the actuality of working in a dairy farm that's pushing, at least in this instance, the kids away, Bill.
Yeah, it's like when we go down there, it's designated areas where you can actually walk. Then there's, you know, you can't go on the farm because if you go on the farm, you've got to be registered. And, you know, if something happens to you, we're in trouble. And like even with the shoes that you wear in and around the studio, if you go onto someone's farm, they've got to be sanitised.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can understand that you've got to take all of those precautions into place. But what I find interesting, Bill, is that, you know, the kids are just not wanting to go into it. This text, and it's from Anonymous, it says, I'm in the process of being handed the family farm. As an only surviving child, I don't see a choice. I must keep the land and I must keep producing it. It's my family's responsibility.
That sense of responsibility must weigh so heavily on their shoulders. Someone who knows a little bit more about this than the rest of us is Emma Germano, who is not only a farmer, but the president of the Victorian Farmers Federation and joins us now. Emma, good morning. How big an issue is this in the agricultural sector, the idea of generational farming and succession plans to ensure that we do keep these family-run businesses alive and thriving?
You've got an hour to talk about this, and I think that it's a conversation that could last for a very, very long time. Rabobank actually came out globally and said the biggest threat to food security is succession planning. So it is a massive issue that we need to grapple with. But just listening to you before you brought me on, it's such an emotional conversation as well, because you were talking about love and this sense of obligation, and it's really to do with a sense of identity. I know on my farm, the farm itself becomes like another member of the family. It's just not as clear cut as succession in other businesses and in other industries. And there is a big difference, of course, between the succession of the business and the inheritance of the land. And because those two things are different, I think it makes it very, very complicated to work out how to move forward as a family.
Are people wanting to take over the family farm? I mean, I know this is that's a sort of a big general question for you, Emma. But are that next generation thinking differently to previous generations around what the future holds for farming, the future for their kids, the future of what, I mean, Dara, I don't even think there is work-life balance in farming, right? There's just work.
That doesn't exist.
No.
It's funny because we were just trying to book a few days away for Easter, and I was talking to my sister, and I was like, why do we leave all of these things to the last minute? Now, she's not on the farm, but the rest of the family are, you know, farmers. My uncle's still a farmer. And she said, it's farm life. Of course we leave booking holidays to the last minute because you just don't know where you're going to be up to. So it does impact the entire way that you live. It's certainly a lifestyle. I think what we've seen, and the data backs this up, is that where industries are making money, there is a greater willingness of the next generation to take it on, which of course makes sense. So you see particular industries standing out from the others, like horticulture, if you look at berry production, they had a lot of young people coming back onto family farms because there was money in it. But yes, it is complicated. And I think what we don't necessarily talk about enough is the level of financial risk that you have to take on as a young person, even if you've been handed on the family, you know, it's literally been handed to you and you haven't had to pay for the land, which is becoming rarer and rarer so that the older generation can get out and have a meaningful retirement. What we have to talk about is the amount of finance required to put in that next crop, to buy your next herd or to replace your animals or whatever it is. It's a massive financial risk. And if you measured risk and reward, we're not really seeing the returns that we need to. And I say that across the board because, of course, there are, you know, different industries that stick out every now and then making a good run of it. But across the board, huge amount of risk for that return.
When we're talking about these family farms, it is quaint and cute to say the word family farm, but these are large-scale operations. We're talking with Emma Germano at the moment, the president of the Victorian Farmers Federation. Emma, when we brought you on at the start, you mentioned food, not scarcity, but the control of food within Australia. How exactly, can you break it down for us? How does generational farming and family farming affect our access to food?
Yeah, I mean, you did make that point yourselves when you were talking about the notion of, the duopoly. And yeah, we will see the landscape change as more and more corporates, in inverted commas, come in. Of course, there are so many family businesses now that are operating like corporates. It's, you know, kind of lacks a definition. But we are seeing that this consolidation of a smaller number of farms into one single larger property, if that concentration continues to happen, I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it certainly will have both benefits and drawbacks. I mean, how do you find staff out in the regions in a lot of cases if they don't have that sense of almost moral obligation to be part of running the family business? Who's coming out at 2 o'clock in the morning to make sure that the heifer that's calving is tended to if there's any problem? You know, that is also an issue. And when we see these smaller families moving out of regions when the farm has been consolidated by a bigger business, it has an impact on the local school and the local community and the businesses that are there and the services that are able to be run in that local community. So there's a lot to grapple with, and this particular issue of succession has a lot of tentacles into lots of different other things that we need to discuss.
Just when we talk about succession, and this I guess is a slightly different conversation, Emma, but are we still seeing some of the same issues with daughters, with women not being included in succession? Is that changing at all?
I think it's shifting. I think it's shifting very slowly. I think as more new technology comes about, there's going to be the opportunity for women to partake in the industry more meaningfully, i.e. when you've got technology and innovation on your farm, all of a sudden you don't have to be able to lift something that's, 100 kilos or, that physical aspect is becoming easier to manage. Cultural changes, of course, take a long time. So whilst we're seeing more women being part of succession and inheritance, there is certainly a disadvantage still if you look across the board in regards to differences between sons and daughters. But, I mean, so too, we've still got that kind of legacy issue where even if you're not the eldest son, you might not have the opportunity to take on the farm, where a number of boys in the family are all, keen to continue farming. I've seen a lot of younger brothers who have to go out and do it on their own without that backing of the family property to start with.
And Emma, just to play, we've got devil's advocates coming in on the text line. This from Matt in Gippsland out your neck of the woods. It says, family farms need to better equip themselves for change. Newer farming styles are needed to deal with climate change, resilience and biodiversity. Corporates are experts at change and paperwork, but farmers need to get these skills. Is there a sense of responsibility perhaps on the farmers, these family farms? Are they not moving with the times or at the same pace as some of these corporates?
Oh, I think you just said, Matt. I think Matt raises a really good point, because when that commentary was being made before I came on, I thought there is, there are drawbacks and benefits to everything. So in a lot of cases, it's becoming difficult for the small family to be able to manage all of the different aspects that are involved in farming now, to the point that the texter has made, whereas corporates might actually have someone who is dedicated to a particular area of the business or specialises in that. We see that even in regards to managing staff. You know, these big businesses often have a dedicated human resources function within their business, which of course family farms are taking on all of that themselves, which do make for a challenge.
And just finally, Emma, quick comment here from Aaron in Bairnsdale, and he's saying, you guys have hit the nail on the head with comments about family not wanting to take over the family farms. I've been appalled to see farming areas southeast of Melbourne. The land is just being carved up and subdivided by the second generations. It's quite a long text, but are you have any concerns? I mean, are you seeing maybe the next generation that says, there's no way I'm going to do this. I'm going to make an absolute fortune if I sell this land to a developer. I'm going to carve it up and I'm going to put a housing estate on here rather than leafy greens or whatever it may have been that they were growing for generations.
I think that that's kind of there's a few potential answers to that. A lot of these farms that are being carved up for future development into housing and accommodation, that sort of thing, there's a lot of pressures that have, you know, nothing to do with succession planning. You know, the rates become far more expensive. It's the council that get to choose whether or not the land is rezoned. You're now, you know, trying to farm in close proximity to large, you know, community bases, or, you know, you're next door to a school. That changes the way that you've got to farm. So there's those challenges. But then, yes, I think the next generation are coming in and looking at these land values that have increased exponentially.
Yeah, they're record numbers.
Absolutely. I make these, I mean, we had this conversation as a family not so long ago. We look at it and we say we're sustaining debt and you know, we continue to move forward in the business. But actually, if we look at what's happened with the land value over the last few years, are we better off just as a family to sell up, take the equity out of it and move on to doing different things? I think the next generation are often, I don't mean better educated in regards to saying that they're smarter, but they've had the opportunity to go off and go to uni like I did, or, you know, work in different businesses, different industries before you're making that decision. Whereas a generation or two ago, you often left school. My dad left school at 14 and went straight.
That's right. And then you see how much hard work it takes. Like this text here, why would you slave your guts out on a dairy farm when you could walk through the supermarket and see a litre of water selling for more than a litre of milk? Or you could sell that land for property and make an absolute fortune. Emma, always great to speak with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Emma Germano there, the president of the VFF. This is from Tim in Ringwood. Sold the family farm. New farmers bought it to expand. There's a lot of droughts. It's not all green grass and rainbows. And others talking about being trapped. So the dairy farming has trapped families into hard labour for generations. Our corporate dairy farms with the shifts, the employees, you can never take holidays. You have to do multiple shifts a day. It's not for everyone. And that's from Anonymous. So what would it change? What does it matter if we had less and less family-run farms? How would it impact all of us?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Daniel Miles with you. Does it matter if we lose family farms? There are concerns, and this is something that's been raised during the Supermarket Senate inquiry. One orchardist said that he believes there will be no family-run farms within 5 to 10 years. So how would that impact all of us?
So many great messages flooding in on the text line. This one, hi Rish and Dan, if there's no family farmers, there'll be no independent food stores. It'll also impact on hospitality venues featuring quality regional produce. So if you want to support family farmers, shop at family-owned independent fruit and veg stores, grocers, butchers. By all means, shop at farmers markets, but don't top up at the duopoly, says Carolyn from Oakley, which raises a really good point. It's not just about regional towns. It's not just about farmers. This is something that impacts all of us. It also impacts Natalie Pizzini from Pizzini Wines, which is a family-run business. Natalie, when we're talking about generational farms, this is something that I imagine is very close to your heart, something that you've experienced yourself. When you look at generational farming, how does it make you feel? Is it trepidation or is it a sense of pride?
Oh, look, it's actually both, Daniel. It's a sense of trepidation but immense pride. When you look back at what we have been given by previous generations to build on, that sense of pride is immense. But how you can sustain and build so that the next generation wants to be part of that journey is a challenge.
When we think about family businesses and succession planning, there's not too many industries, there's not too many professions. Now, once upon a time, family businesses were more common. I think farming is one of the last great big parts of our community where you do think ahead, Natalie, with every decision you make. You're not just thinking about how it impacts your here and now and your profit and your bottom line. You're thinking about generations to come. As a family, how do you discuss that?
Oh, look, you know, it's on the table every 6 months. You really have to consciously sit down and discuss. It's not just a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 year business plan. It's what is this farm going to look like in 20 years' time? It's actually even just physically sitting down and drawing what that looks like. But there is, you know, when you think about the challenges that family farms are facing, it's not just the issues to do with climate change. It's also to do with how you manage the process of succession so that you have not just the product going forward and new products going forward, but also sustained love within your family. It's such a fraught process.
Natalie, what do you think happens if we get to a point where families stop taking on farms? We lose this generational aspect of farming and it becomes a more corporate-run thing just due to the efficiencies that they can have when it's a large-scale operation running?
I often think about the little saying, necessity is the mother of invention. And I think family farms bring diversity in experience. Now, if I look just at the wine industry and agritourism, that, you know, it's sometimes a very different experience, tourism experience, if you go to a smaller family-run operation compared to a bigger corporate-run entity. And I'm not certainly not suggesting one is better than the other. I'm just saying that they're different. There's also, you know, when you look at product development, sometimes those smaller family farms can act quickly and you can go from, you know, just producing apples to producing apple juice in a shorter period of time than what it would be if it was a corporate entity.
And then there's that idea of changes, right, and progression and maybe the next generation coming in and wanting to take the business in different directions. But also too, Natalie, I mean, I'm just thinking about the businesses that my parents ran as a kid. And there was times I remember thinking, there's not a chance in hell I'd want to do what you do, right? Mm-hmm. The hours that you work, I never see you. You're stressed. This is just awful. Mm. Don't pass that on to me. So there, it would also, and I'm not saying that that's how your family operates, Natalie, but within a broader picture, it's such hard, intense, stressful work.
It's physically intense, but also emotionally intense. But the thing is, it depends on your own personal purpose and what drives you. For some people, that sort of activity is exciting. And you can see the hard work that you put in is directly impacts the benefits you get out. Having said that, I do watch my mum and dad working sometimes 7 days a week for months on end. Mm-hmm. And you would think that that wouldn't happen, but they love it. And if I think about what my Nonna Rosetta used to say, she used to say, the day you stop working is the day you die. And so it's ingrained in family members that it's just part of it.
It's what you do.
Yeah.
That's right. Some of us enjoy it, some of us don't.
Exactly. And it's all about sustainability, not only with the land, but with the work itself. Natalie Pizzini, thank you so much for joining us on the Conversation Hour.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So much to read into of this, Rochelle.
I love the idea of Nonna working that hard, but I also hate the idea of once you stop working, then you die.
I want Nonna to put her feet up a little bit as well.
Nonna to retire, right? And lead a good life too. Mark's in the northeast of Victoria. Morning, Mark.
How you going?
Good, mate. What did you want to say?
Well, I took over the family farm and I have a business that works supplying other farms a product. And I've seen quite a few farms in this area turn over to corporate farms. The family farm, we look after the land. We try and farm. We use fertilisers that are good for the farms, and we can sell a good product and we can sell into farmers' markets and stuff like that. You get a corporate farm, someone in the ivory tower says, spray this, spray that, spray this, spray that, you know, put fertiliser on this, do that, do this, you know, all of these things, which then when we go to the supermarket, we're buying stuff that's infected with all these sprays. I'm no greenie, believe me, but...
You just lose that control of someone being...
Yeah. You don't have any personal control. It comes from up top, and the corporate farms become just machines, and they have to run them within an inch of their life, and they're not family farms anymore. They're not, and the product is not as good. The meat is you know, they juice the cattle up, they juice the sheep up, they do whatever they have to do to put a product.
Hey, Mark, you're in the northeast of town. How has it changed where you live, having family farms disappear and these corporate farms take over? Has it actually changed your town?
Look, I'm in Albury Wodonga, so it's not that bad. I'm out of town. I'm out the beachside side of Wodonga, my own farm. But I do a lot of work in the New South Wales where corporate farms are, and crikey, Charlie, you know. I went to one the other day and I was just, I'm sure there as a kid, and I was just gobsmacked how desolate,
how much of a difference it makes
in its life.
Wow. There's a text here, Mark, that says a similar thing. It's from Jenny Coburg, and she says, this is terrifying, what the danger of something like Coles or Woolies, for example, expanding into agribusiness on a large scale. Mark, really good to get your insights. Thank you so much. Julie's in the Wimmera.
Well, one of the things that has been shown by surveys, I'm in the Wimmera, and the local catchment authority had done surveys numbers of years back that we use as a benchmarking process. Family farms want to hand on their farms to the next generation in better condition than what they had before. Now, that is not the same kind of ethos that corporate farms work on. Corporate farms are just working on profit. And if they have to... bend the rules a little bit, and we've seen numbers of them.
Is there not greater scrutiny now, though? I mean, how do we know that, Julie? Mm. How do we know that? Because now when we look at everything that we know about climate change, everything that we know about how we treat the land, if a corporate farm was to come in but the regulations were watertight, they were checked, how do we know they wouldn't leave the land in a better state than a family farmer would?
We've had a couple of examples here in the Wimmera where corporate farms have come in. Their profit model is based on offloading the land over a period of time, and they're based on the appreciation of the land value. So whether they actually make a profit from the farming enterprise is neither here nor there, because it's about selling the land at a much greater price than what they had, and that's built into their profit model.
Good to hear from you, Julie, as well. Ron's called through as well. Ron's in Benalla.
Look, I don't have that much of a problem with family farms being lost and corporates taken over. My main concern there would be overseas interests buying into the farms so that they can export the produce directly overseas to supply their own markets. We don't gain any benefit from that. And my other concern is I'm worried that councils have a vested interest in approving rezoning and subdivisions of farms because of extra rate revenue.
Because of rates and the money to be made from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where do consumers come into this, Daniel Miles? Yeah. Where are we as consumers, what we pay, where we shop, how much interest we pay to where our produce comes from, you know, when maybe we might say, no, we don't want medium or high density houses where we live. So then that pushes urban sprawl out. It eats into peri-urban farming areas. What role do we all play into this?
I think we all have a role, but whether we have the ability to fully partake is a different thing. We have the opportunity to, as we've had from so many callers and texts so far, support independent, support homegrown. But often they can't compete economically with the scale that a lot of these commercial farms can, because they are running a smaller business. And as a result, sometimes the price difference makes it too hard for us to go, I'm going to go and buy all of my groceries from an independent grocer. I'm going to shop exclusively at a farmer's market and have that have that choice and make my voice and my dollars heard, whereas the economy of scale makes it so much more affordable.
So corporate farming could make our produce cheaper?
Potentially, but then again, as we heard at the top of the program, some of these orchardists are saying that good luck getting, you know, your apples at a price. So it is so hard.
And we throw the term corporate farm around, right? What actually is a corporate farm? Who's the corporation? Not all corporations are bad,
no,
right?
No, and I don't think anyone's saying that. It's more, what do you lose from having that family love, what we were talking about with Emma Germano earlier? What do you lose
from... Love don't pay the bills sometimes.
If it did, I'd be a very rich man. I've got love aplenty, but maybe not dollars. That's where I fall short.
Yeah, but you're going to run short on spinach at the end of the week. So maybe you're a generational farmer. Have you taken over the family farm? Or are you next in line and you're thinking twice about taking over the family farm? And does it matter if we have less and less family-run farms?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Daniel Miles with you. The future of family farming, does it make a difference to all of us if there are less and less family farms and more corporate farming? How does it change our lives? There's a text here from Marianne that says, I don't understand why the issue of food security has taken such a backseat in this conversation. Well, let's change that. Dr. Homoni Parsons is the CEO of Australia Logistics Council. She's formerly the Director for the Centre for Supply Chain and Logistics at Deakin, and I know you've got a big background in agriculture as well, Homoni, and have spent a lot of time overseas and seen the difference between family and corporate farms. If we were to shift to corporate farming, if the majority of our farming was corporate, how would that change our food security?
I think the first thing is, by defining things by this term corporate, we're confusing some issues as I see it. So that when you look at the term corporate, it means you've got probably a board, you've got a governance over the business. So what are we really talking about? And it would seem to me that if you look at some corporate businesses, like there is a family business that runs a company called Almare, 60,000 Holstein cows that live in the deserts of Saudi Arabia in the most astonishing distribution farming sheds, and producing dairy for so many countries in that part of the world. And Almare is a family business. And Almare is obviously a very wealthy family business. They have planes and ships and trucks and 60,000 Holstein cows that are producing more milk per cow than they would be in the best farming areas in Northern Europe. So what do we actually mean? And I think We have a very long history of this notion of corporate farming or agribusiness. And it starts, you know, back at the end of World War II, when businesses were being developed into integrated systems to feed a rapidly growing population across the world. And so we're actually, this notion of corporate farming and agribusiness started decades and decades ago. And it was looking at how integrated systems and businesses could approach farming differently. So this is not a new issue. This is a constant evolution.
And Hermione, with that in mind, take us and paint a picture for us. How will the increase, if that is what's to happen, of corporate farming and a reduction in family-run farms affect supply chain, affect, you know, the average mum and dad at home buying their groceries? What's the impact on us?
Well, I actually think if you scratch the surface of that question, you have to go back to the issue that Australia has astonishing number and variety of small farms doing extraordinarily innovative things that then people will be buying wherever they buy their, say, their fruit and vegetables or their food products. So, you know, I've got a list in front of me of different companies, and I presume you don't want the names of them, but really interesting companies. I was lucky to be on the board of a government initiative a number of years ago called Food Innovation Australia. And that meant I was meeting so many really innovative companies. They started off as family businesses, but often that meant that they needed to farm as a business, and if they were going to succeed, and therefore to remain competitive, they looked at how they could govern their family business in a different way. So these are small family businesses all across Australia doing really innovative, interesting things.
And I wonder if there's a way that if we could do it, that it could be done well. But, you know, there's texts here that say huge-scale farming is about quantity and not necessarily about quality. We know the land can't sustain huge monocultures. Really good to get your insights on this, Hermani. Thank you. Dr. Hermani Parsons, who's the CEO of Australian Logistics Council. Morning, Adam.
Look, I'm a small farmer down here in Macarthur with a couple of agricultural interests as well, and it's a terrific topic, but, you know, I have a mate of mine in agri-politics, and we're having a chat quite often, and he talks to me about the cost of inputs and the rest of it, and I tell him, you know, you can't just work on, that's why you need more money for your product. If you look at a young family living in outer suburb of Melbourne, they're struggling to survive at the moment. Interest rates, they've got a house, they probably might have a full-time job, it's casual. And, you know, you want to sell, you don't want a dollar a litre of milk. Well, that's what they're going to buy because they're struggling to survive. You've got to basically sell what the value of your product is, what goes into it. And people have also got to realise, I think, that, you know, when you buy product out of Australia, it's really good food quality, it's really good traceability, it's really good value for money, and you have to sell the benefits of it. You can't always just say, oh, well, you know, it's cheap or we're into the supermarket. They're providing a service. And they provide a service that people like, but as farmers, we've sort of got to get there and say, well, $2.50 in the kilo, $2.50 a kilo for a beef you sold the other day, and it's $40 for 4 hour steak, might be you've got a problem in the middle as well. So
you bring up some good points, Adam. We're talking about generational farming. What's your plan with your farm when it comes time to get out of the game?
Well, I actually started off living in Melbourne, and I've built my life up. I'm 62 now, and I bought a farm, and I've got two boys. They're not interested in it at all. They just say, you know, when it's time to go, Dad, you're going to go. It's not a big property, so I've got to do a few other things to supplement my income. But I've always wanted to be a farmer right from when I was a kid because I was involved with my father was involved in International Harvest and Manufacturing, and I thought farming was fantastic. I'm a big believer in regenerative farming, what we can do with it. But I've got to tell you, I don't tell anyone I'm a farmer now. I work in agriculture.
Interesting.
It's
so why? Why do you say that, Adam? Why did you change how you introduce your profession?
Well, look, I think it's a tremendously noble profession. I really do. But, you know, it's our world of partly farmers' fault of climate change and the rest of it. And, look, we've done carbon testing in our little farm at a tremendous cost. We're doing things to sequester carbon back in there. We're trying to feed our animals in a way that, you know, suits the environment, the rest of it. Some days, you know, you feel like you're a criminal because of what you're doing. Really, you're just working on a product and feeding the world. If they want meat, they want meat. If they want barley, they want barley. Man, some days, I tell you right now, I can sit in the paddock and you talk about mental health issues and go, I don't want to be a livestock farmer anymore. I deal in cattle. That's part of my business. I could do something else where I live. It's not suitable for other things at this stage. So it'll come. Won't be in my lifetime, but it will come. But
well, we wish you all the best, Adam, and we wish your kids all the best as well. Really good to get your perspective on this. And this, it says, I agree that we need to be careful about defining corporate farming. Members of my family run a multi-million dollar grain farming enterprise in WA. There's a board of directors and they're all family members. That's from Ruth. Let's have a chat to Peter. He's in Bacchus Marsh. G'day, Peter.
There you go.
Good.
Yeah, I'm really concerned on two issues, but first one is foreign investment. We've got the government's allowing so much foreign investment, and one of your other callers mentioned this. They're using it as investment in this part of this Ponzi real estate situation that exists in Australia at the moment. And they're buying up large tracts of land without any regulation at all.
Absolutely, Peter. Thank you for your call. Gordon's also given us a call from near Bendigo. Good morning, Gordon.
Yes, good morning. Probably stepping back from where you started here, if you have the opportunity or you inherit a reasonable property, you have to have the ability or the love to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You see many examples where family members do not have the talents or the ability to do the work of the property. Unless you have a love for the land, you have to have a great love for it, and you love doing it. You then succeed by doing the extra hours. You love it that much.
Do you think that's the idea? Has that been exploited, even by us as consumers, for too long, that farmers do this because they love it? It's in their blood. It's generational. It's something that they just do. And as a result, like, you know, Natalie Pizzini's nonna, she works 7 days a week and did so for her entire life because she loved it. Is that too much to ask of anyone, though?
No, I don't think so. If you really love the job, if you really love the land and you love the job, you don't think about that part of it. Money is only a side issue. There's years when you go zero. There's years when you make huge profits. And that is part of the fun of doing it.
Mm. I think money's only a side issue, though, when you have enough of it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, Gordon, I love that you've brought us back to the point of love, because that's something our next guest is a master in. Sam Marwood is the co-founder and CEO of Cultivate Farms. And, Sam, the way I like to describe you is you're kind of like a matchmaker. Speaking of love, you're bringing farmers and farmlands together. Is that fair?
I do talk about love a lot. You've hit the nail on the head, but it is. It's about relationships. There are people out there who all they do is dream of farming and they want to own their farm, but they don't have the millions of dollars. And there's retiring farmers out there who don't have kids or the kids don't want it. And so it's how do you match these people to share the business, to share the land potentially, and farm the way they want to in an agreed way.
Do we rely too much on love, on passion, on the idea of, you know, what makes a good farmer here in Australia? Is that a bit of a broken system? Gordon seems to think it works, but what do you make of it?
Well, I think you work out you're in love first and then you get your business plan sorted. So we're very much about backing Aussie farmers to work through financial models that can work and business models that work for their farm. And then for the next generation, it's saying if you're a good farmer, you know how to farm, then it's about finding people who you can partner with. I think the days of being able to go up and just buy a farm starting from scratch are almost over.
It's almost, I couldn't imagine anyone being able to afford that. And if you had that much money, then would you want to go into farming, you know?
Well, you have a lot of love and a lot of money.
I mean, are you seeing more and more people coming to you now saying, my kids don't want this, but I love this land. Mm. I've built this over generations. I want it to go to someone else who will carry on this work, but it just so happens not to be my own flesh and blood.
More and more. It is still such a tough discussion to have. You know, it's your life. It's what you've done your whole life. And that, you know, first off, to get your kids to say they don't want it, that's a hard discussion. Mm. And then for them to say, well, what do? Do I sell and walk away? And I've heard so many stories of people doing that. But then we just want to say to them, you can just walk away. Absolutely. There are other kids out there, though, you could adopt and take on who would love the farm just as much as you. And your kids probably would love that, to know that they've still got a farm there that they can go back to. So for us, it's just letting people know the options. We're working as about a half a dozen options for transitioning farms where you as the farmer can stay involved as much or as little as you want.
Are there many kids out there that want to take on farming, Sam, that are looking for that right match to find from a farmer to a farmer? Or are we seeing a bit of a drop-off in the number of people who are actually interested and have that love for the land and want to become a farmer?
Thousands. I think when the robots come, there'll still be people wanting to farm. You know, there's this driven inside of people to farm. And we talk to them every day. And there's people who want to farm that are happy to be a farm worker. But really, there's this desire and ownership, and we're saying, well, maybe you can own a portion of it. Okay, if you can do that now, let's find someone who's willing to share with you. And that could be a retiring farmer, but we also talk with locals who have money. There's a great example called Circular Head Farms in Northwest Tassie. They own 14 farms by locals. All the locals get in and invest. So it's how there's these solutions out there. Our job is to get beside the next-gen farmers and tell them, be good enough. Get out there, be good enough, and then find opportunities that are out there.
Just finally, Sam, is there a way that corporate can get involved that's not 100% that can be beneficial, where you get the financial security and backing, maybe you get all the machinery and all of the stuff, and they can come in and help? I mean, Tim's in the southwest. He sent this message and he's talking about Hermione, I believe, our previous guest, and he says, thanks to your current guest and their good bit of balance, I'm employed by and work in corporate ag, and I feel like a lot of family farms would benefit from the audit and the oversight process that we have to adhere to. Is there a way that we could combine
marry the two together?
Marry corporate and family?
I think so. And we've spoken to a number of organisations saying if you can offer some sort of ownership, and I guess what are we trying to do here, is it to ensure locals own local farms? If that's the aim, and there's ways that corporates can offer ownership, whether it's in the herd, whether it's in the machinery, there's some way to help farmers build that wealth. You know, corporate's biggest issue is getting, and any farm, I guess, is getting the right people, the good staff. And if you can offer a carrot of ownership, whether that's business side of things, then I think that could be a win-win for everyone. And then they're supporting the next generation to get good enough so that one day maybe they head off and do get their own farm by partnering with somebody else.
Sam Marwood, keep on the good work of finding these matches and bringing some more love to the farm. It's a beautiful idea, but it also, as you mentioned, might be the future of farming. Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
That's Sam Marwood, the co-founder and CEO of Cultivate Farms. What a brilliant idea, slicing off little bits of farms to secure a future, because that's what we're talking about today, generational farming, making it work throughout the generations. Does it matter if we see less and less family-run farms right across Australia? Let us know.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Rochelle Hunter, Dan Miles with you. One of the many things that the Senate inquiry into supermarkets has raised is the future of family farms, with some people believing that we won't have any within 5 to 10 years. This text says, my dad and uncles and aunt sold my grandparents' farm off in Tassie in the 90s. It had been in the family since they were freed convicts. They didn't want a farm, but all of us grandkids, me and all of my cousins, would love to have it now.
Hmm. That idea of loss is, yeah, really permeable and tangible. But I guess that next generation of finding farms is what we're really talking about. And it's something that Dr. Amy Crosby knows a lot about. She's a Gippsland-based dairy farmer and academic, and is someone that has a bit of a passion for securing that next generation of farming. Amy, thanks for joining us. Tell us a bit about the work that you're doing with schools, with STEM products, and finding that next generation of family farmers for us.
Hi, thanks for having me. Our research team focuses on attracting, retaining and developing the next generation agricultural workforce. So we work with schools and students across the country trying to raise aspirations and also build knowledge of what a career in agriculture can look like.
Is that what's blurred at the moment, what a career in agriculture looks like? And we've already, like we heard earlier from a caller who said, I don't call myself a farmer, I say I work in agriculture. Is there a stereotype that hangs over what a farmer looks like? Or like not physically, but you know, what the idea of farming is?
Yeah, I think there is a misconception of what working in agriculture looks like. And there's lots of roles on farm that need to be filled, but there's also a myriad that don't involve owning land or working on a day-to-day basis on a farm. And I think those roles like agronomists, working in banking, working in marketing to sell our wonderful product, they're sort of careers that are often not seen.
Are we doing enough to make them visible? Do we do enough to actually promote this element, as far as, you know, we're talking about maybe giving it a bit of a makeover, a rebrand, the idea of ag, but are we getting into schools and getting on the front foot? Because we know, as we've heard throughout the conversation, that if we don't do that, we're looking at things like food scarcity, which affects everyone.
Yeah, research teams like ours are really focused on getting into as many schools as possible, and there are numbers of industry groups like the School to Industry Partnership Program, AgForce in Queensland, that do a wonderful job, the Primary Industry Education Foundation, PIFA, that do. But I think as a dairy farmer, as someone working in agriculture, I think the responsibility is everyone's to really tell the good news stories. Often in agriculture, in the media, we really focus on the negatives, and that's what makes you know, mainstream media. And if all young people are hearing it's a negative story, if they're only hearing firsthand from other people about negatives, they're not going to want to work in that space.
How many generations are you as a dairy farmer? I mean, we had a text before that said, why on earth would you want to be a dairy farmer? You just work your guts out.
Yeah, so my husband is a third generation dairy farmer and my three boys will be fourth. Rowd and I saved for our farm for 13 years. So we bought in 2018 in South Gippsland. He's a generational farmer, but our farm is not a family farm. We bought it on our own. And yeah, often people ask why on earth we would want to do this, but it's been a shared goal and vision for us ever since we were together when I was 17. And we absolutely love being dairy farmers. We love producing fresh milk. We know that we're feeding the globe. You know, we're contributing, we're looking after the land, looking after animals. And, you know, my kids are only pretty young, but I'm pretty excited for their future in ag. And I think that, if they're keen to be farmers, keen to work in agriculture, we'll do everything we can to support them.
And
I'd like to clarify, though, that we, you know, agricultural businesses, and I heard one of the guests earlier say, you know, you work every day and you don't necessarily always make a lot of money. And I think particularly in younger farmers, that sentiment is changing. Our business is a profitable business and we work, it's not going to be profitable every year. I'm not under any illusion. But we also set it up in a way so that we can have a really good work-life balance.
And you don't have to just survive on love, because as noble as that seems, right, it's not something that you want to pass on to your boys. Amy, thank you. Thanks for your insights today. We really appreciate it. Dr. Amy Crosby there, Gippsland dairy farmer and academic as well. These texts. My cousin, a fourth generation farmer in the southwest of Victoria, used to say his farming was mostly a lifestyle and every so often an enterprise. The fifth generation left farming. And others, Dan, saying corporate and family farms are both important. We need diversity in farmers. That's also important.
Mm. And that's, I guess, why it's a sort of a positive note to end on. We're hearing about how farming is so difficult, the slog. But when you hear from people like Dr. Amy Crosby, they're saying, I can't wait for my kids to get into farming. I can't wait to share the farm with them and that life. Maybe that's the glimmer of hope that we're looking for in this conversation.
And I think too, as consumers, we're more aware now. COVID did anything good, right, a sentence that you don't say very often, is that we started to understand where our produce come from and how fragile that supply chain can be if we aren't able to produce, supply and feed ourselves, which in Victoria we can do very easily.
Yeah.
Daniel Miles, nice to have you in the studio, mate.
It's fun, isn't it?
That's been great. I'll speak to you next week. Don't forget, the Conversation Hour is a podcast. You can listen back, you can share it, go to the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to the Conversation Hour pod.